This is CBS Eye on the World, the New World Report. I'm John Batchelor with Professor Evan Ellis of the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. Two big elections in the calendar year 22 in the New World. The Colombia election is decided for Gustavo Petro. The unknowns are the Brazilian election later this year. And a new voice to me, and the professor will help me, a candidate for the presidency as well. We have President Bolsonaro representing the right of center, former President Lula da Silva representing the left of center. And I don't know where to put Ciro Gomes. An article in the Financial Times introduces me to a man who has some sharp things to say about both Lula da Silva and President Bolsonaro. At the same time, apparently, he runs repeatedly. This is a tradition with him to run in the first round. The way Brazil works, if I understand correctly, the two highest candidates in the first round, if nobody gets more than 50%, run in a runoff. We saw that in Colombia. Professor, what do we need to know about Ciro Gomes before I begin quoting his pungent remarks about the president, Bolsonaro, and the former president, Lula da Silva?
John, it's a great question. Probably the most impactful thing about Ciro Gomes is his belief that despite having only about 8% in the polls, probably being very unrealistic for him to capture a slot in the second round. He's a man whose politics are across the board, but he's a character. He has a real fighting spirit, formerly from Ceará State. He's more closely aligned with the left, having been part of the government of Lula back in 2003. But more than anything else, his perception to stay in the race is really a continuing reflection of the frustration and his perception that there's room for expression of frustration with both candidates. His sense that, as he himself has said, Lula da Silva represents a part of kind of the corrupt populist past of Brazilian machine politics, especially the Workers' Party, as brought out by things like the Odebrecht scandal back in 2014. But on the other hand, the frustration with many Brazilians that Bolsonaro represents, one of the more uglier populist tendencies on the right. Gomes is actually called Bolsonaro unpredictable and crazy. So the sad truth is that at 8%, it indicates that there is a group in Brazil that feels dissatisfied with both of their other choices, not unlike what has occurred in the United States in recent years. However, increasingly that dissatisfied center is a relative minority and unlikely to prevail.
The quote from candidate Gomes, "The system is not working." This is the Financial Times. "It is working for a micro elite, but it is destroying the country. The minimum wage today offers the worst purchasing power since 2008. Those are hard charges, Professor. This is a man who clearly has done his homework. He then goes on to say that 70 out of 100 Brazilian workers are either informally employed, that is to say, the economy you can't see and it's probably not taxed, or unemployed. The official statistics, I thought, well, maybe that's exaggerated, suggest the figure is closer to 50. 50% are underemployed or unemployed or under the table? That's astonishing. Is that a record that was true for Lula da Silva back at the beginning of the century as it is for Bolsonaro?
Well, John, because Brazil has a relatively large, complex economy, and frankly, because Portuguese-speaking Brazil oftentimes receives less attention than other parts of Latin America, especially Spanish-speaking Latin America, we don't look at Brazil in those ways. But these are really challenges that are true across the board, especially in the wake of COVID-19 and the inflationary pressures from Russia's invasion of the Ukraine, but things that also were endemic difficulties, not only in Brazil, but across the region. But the question of a relatively large informal sector and underemployment, for example, in Peru, also the informal sector is estimated to be 70% of the society. In Mexico, the figures are similar. And so coming out and pointing out that in Brazil, things are as bad, despite the perception of Brazil as a somewhat more developed economy. And also, as many of our listeners in the United States can identify with very well, the sense that there is an increasingly marginalized traditional class, the core agricultural workers in the center of the country and elsewhere, who have been left behind, who've been left behind by increasing fertilizer prices, increasing fuel prices, increasing prices for cooking oil and other things, left behind by other inflationary pressures, frankly, the sense that there is a political system that has not served their interests. Again, you know, combining their personal situation with frustration with the perception of corruption. I believe Gomesh made allusions to the, so to speak, duffel bags of cash that were regularly found, you know, various advisors and others attached to Lula as well as Dilma Rousseff during the PT rule. And so really what Gomesh is trying to tap into is the sense of basically the increasingly marginalized status of the Brazilian, you know, working people of all stripes, which is not unlike a story which is driving a lot of difficulties in political change and social protests across Latin America right now.
He goes on to criticize both Bolsonaro and Lula da Silva, but especially Lula da Silva, whom he worked for at one point. Now, the polls right now say Lula da Silva, according to the FT, 47%, Bolsonaro 29%. That means that if Gomes holds his 8%, it is unlikely for us to see a 50% winner at this time. But, you know, things change. But in any event, he goes on to say they are both versions of the same story, which is to feed the business elite. We have many names for it, the elite, the business elite, the billionaires, many names. He then says that Lula's popularity, this is a discerning critic of, he should be a political reporter. Quote, romanticized memories of his government, which have been exacerbated further by the extraordinary problems that the Brazilian people have been facing under Bolsonaro. In other words, you're not remembering what actually happened under Lula da Silva. Or are they, Professor? You know, it could be that they don't have good choices. They're going to go to the one that hurts them least.
You're certainly right, John, that one of the keys to political power in the contemporary moment is the ability to cast what was actually what happened in the past and why. And it's reasonable to say that, yes, during especially the first term of Lula da Silva, he had enormous advantages. Oil prices for Brazilian oil exports were relatively high. Conditions in the world economy were relatively good. And so Lula was able to take relative abundance and use part of that abundance to do a cash transfer program called Bolsa Família, which was seen as very popular, was seen as something that adhered to market principles and yet did something to help bring essentially poor families out of poverty and into some degree into the middle class. And so things really didn't start getting bad and falling apart in Brazil until Lula had left and his handpicked successor, Dilma Rousseff, and especially 2014, 2015, when the corruption of the Odebrecht scandal broke out, when of course the oil prices began to fall, when the Brazilian economy began to collapse. And so you're right, Lula da Silva left power before things really had begun to fall apart with about 80% popularity. And so the argument is that Brazil today, in terms of the economic conditions with you know, post-COVID-19 fiscal constraints, inflationary pressures, is very different than the Brazil that Lula began with in 2003 and whose and many people say that the story of Lula was basically reaping that harvest, even while he complicated the bureaucracy and really impeded the business environment in Brazil. That's really the conservative line. And so, the sense is that those who expect to return to the good old days of 2003 by returning to Lula are going to be disappointed by that.
About the future for Brazil, Mr. Gomes has pungent things to say, but he can't direct foreign policy that hasn't been created yet. We have a report that a senior foreign affairs advisor to former President Lula da Silva says that sanctions against Russia have either failed or are a mistake, indicating that Lula da Silva will continue much of President Bolsonaro's outreach to Russia. Now, I understand there's a practical element to this. Brazil needs fertilizer for its crop, and it feeds a large percentage of the world, so good for fertilizer. And President Bolsonaro was in Moscow in the early days of the Ukraine conflict. But is there a tradition in Brazil to be to make outreach to adversaries of the United States. It's not just the United States, it's NATO now. I mean, this is a brave new world we're in. Russia is no longer a fertilizer supporter. It's an active combatant.
Well, John, Brazil's foreign policy tradition has always been very complicated. Particularly the politics of their foreign ministry, Itamar Chi, have always been seen as relatively left or center left. Brazil's interests are long seen as very different than those of the United States. And yet at the same time, Brazil also has been at democracy and an ally of the United States. We can only remember Brazil's contributions to World War II, the Italy campaign, for example. Ana Morim himself is a character. He was, again, the foreign minister during Lula da Silva's first period in office. And as China, for example, was expanding its presence in Brazil, it was actually Ana Morim who talked about the Chinese basically being worse exploiters than the traditional capitalist world. And so Ana Morim is a real character and certainly a pragmatist. But if you recall, during the Lula period, Lula famously tried to make a Brazil not only relevant on the international stage again, by contrast to many Latin American countries, but to kind of thread away between the right and the left. So it was actually Lula that reached out at the time to try to negotiate a deal with Iran, bringing Turkey into the fold. These are details that many of us forget. And so it's not surprising that Ana Morim, clearly one of Lula's key foreign policy advisors, but not necessarily the next foreign minister, is talking about navigating a neutral path between the U.S., Russia, and China, why can't we all just get along? Now, worrisome, in talking about the nuclear war risk and talking about reestablishing relations with Venezuela, certainly if Lula does follow that line, and there's no reason to believe that he would not, it's just a reminder that when we look at, for example, where AMLO is going in Mexico, when we look at where Brazil appears to be going, when we look at where Petro appears to be going with reestablishing relations with Venezuela, so not just in our own hemisphere, but in the U.S. coordinating with like-minded democratic allies in terms of policy towards China and Russia, we have a real problem. We have a real problem in finding a hemisphere that will support us against some of what we perceive to be the key threats from beyond the hemisphere to security here. And it's a reminder that as the hemisphere politically changes, we're going to have increasing difficulty getting solid cooperation on those issues that we believe important to our security.
The New World Report with the Latin American research professor at the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute, Evan Ellis. We turn now to a mystery still in Buenos Aires, a cargo plane. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.